would go and cry to somebody else when we complained about the NCAA, and that activists have been targeting. Tonight on the Bob Tuscan Show, Brian Jacob Church, a protester known as one of the NATO Three, who was held and questioned at Holman Square in 2012 following a police raid, joined us. Officers restrained Church for the better part of a day, denying him access to an attorney before sending him to a nearby police station to be booked and charged. He joins us for a tell-all on Holman Square tonight. He had to learn about it the hard way on May 16th, 2012. He and 11 others were taken there after police infiltrated their protest against the NATO summit. He talks about how officers cuffed him to a bench for an estimated 17 hours intermittently interrogating him without reading his Miranda rights remained silent. Without further ado, for the first time that I know of, Brian Jacob Church speaks on the air to us, the Freedom Project and the Bob Tuscan Show. Brian, how are you tonight, man?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing next?
Can't complain. And a small world, just a little bit of insight here. We have a mutual friend before this all happened. You had just started listening to the show a little bit, and sure enough, falling down, and my buddy, who's a friend of ours, called me and said, did you hear what happened to Brian? Did you hear what happened to Brian? And I said, no, what are you talking about? Well, he said, turn on the news. And that's when we first learned about what was later called the NATO Three. They charged you with essentially terrorism, the highest charges they possibly could, and there was tons of evidence right off the bat that this is entrapment, that this was spinned charges for some activists like yourself, and we can talk about the case a little bit later. First, I want to talk about what happened at Holman and what experience was there. Walk me through your arrest and what exactly happened to your arrest. Where were you? Give me kind of the details in order of the way it happened.
All right. So that the night we arrested, we were, you know, hanging out and stuff, and we were hanging out with these two people who claimed to be activists themselves, but turned out to be the officers. This night, they had brought up some ideas to, Molotov cocktails, and, according to our political philosophy, I consider myself to be an anarchist. We don't feel justified in, holding ourselves over authority over other people. So essentially, like we're not comfortable with what's going on, but I mean, you're your own person, you're a human being. As long as you don't get hurt, you know, do whatever you do. So later that night, we were awaited, typical team military style fashion. And we were placed against the wall with our handcuffs, on our back, we tried to ask them, if they could use a warrant or if they could tell us what was going on, and of course we didn't get no answers, besides shut the hell up and stuff like that. So it was maybe 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, when they took us all to their unmarked police vehicles, and they brought us to this facility we now know as Holman Square. Once we arrived at Holman Square, they drove us to one of the last garage doors on the building. If you're facing the building, it's the right-hand side. In a lot of the pictures that you see behind, there's, you can see some of the garage doors that are there. So they took us to this last garage door, and they brought us in, to this big parking garage style warehouse, where they took pictures of us. And, you know, I mean, this is my first time really being arrested. I've been arrested before, but that's another story. So then they brought us in and took pictures of us. I thought that, you know, they were going to book us properly. You know, I mean, from the types of military vehicles that I saw in the garage, like, I knew this wasn't a regular facility, but I still thought that, you know, for some reason that they would still follow the laws. The officer who drove me to the facility actually told me that the pictures that they were taking were not actually going to be for booking purposes, but rather they were going to use these pictures for facial recognition, and the pictures were going to go into an FBI database.
They actually told you that?
Yes. So when he told me this, it was at this point that I realized that, no, this was actually not a typical police facility, and this was not, you know, a typical arrest or harassment, just, you know, trying to scare the protesters away. So the officer brought us up to these interrogation cells that we had to go to, and he led us into these interrogation cells. So I was walking through the building. I took in my surroundings. You know, it was a pretty nondescript cinder block, you know, painted white and gray type building. And so we took a right, and as I looked down this hallway that we were going into, I saw solid steel doors with folders taped on them. I didn't understand what the folders were there for until I was actually placed into one of these interrogation cells. These folders are there to actually make it so that you can't actually see outside of the cell, because there's a little window there. When the officer brought me into the cell, he took my left hand and he handcuffed it to the bench. But when he handcuffed me to the bench, he saw that I had the number to the National Lawyers Guild written on my arm. He recognized the number and said to me, "Oh, what phone number is that?" And before I could answer, he said, "Oh, that's the National Lawyers Guild." And there was another officer standing with him, and they just, like, started laughing about it, of course. And so when he said that, I was like, I said to him, "Yeah, that's the National Lawyers Guild number, and I would like to make a phone call." It was then that the officer who handcuffed me to the bench told me that, no, I would not be able to make any phone calls from this facility, and I wouldn't be going anywhere or talking to anybody for some time. It was at this point where I realized, okay, this is a little bit more serious than not only did I initially think, but even after coming through the garage and seeing all those vehicles and, you know, the FBI database with the pictures and stuff, I realized, okay, this is something a lot more serious than just some, you know, typical stuff that they try to pull with people.
Wow.
The first thing that came to my mind was the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012, which I'm sure, as you and your listeners know, the National Defense Authorization Act has a certain provision written inside. It's like maybe a paragraph or two that details about how police and military can arrest and indefinitely detain American citizens without actually charging them or, like, granting them access to an attorney or even, you know, court, going to court and trial and stuff like that. And it's an indefinite detention, and the language used in this provision it says indefinite detention until end of terrorist hostilities. So, you know, I've done some research, and typically when somebody makes a lot of noise and they don't agree with our government, they tend to set them up or, you know, charge them with terrorism or even go as far as assassinating that person, like they did with Freddie Hampton and Malcolm X. So, as I'm sitting in this place, handcuffed to a bench, I'm thinking to myself, okay, we just got black bag. We're never going to get out of here. You know, so I was sitting on the bench. I tried to go to sleep or whatever. You know, it was very uncomfortable because they wouldn't unhandcuff me and my ankles were shackled together. And, you know, nobody knew I was there, and so I was a little bit stressed out. But then they came in and they started, like, asking me questions. They started trying to interrogate me about, like, my political philosophy and the kind of people that I hang out with and where I'm from, why I was in Chicago and stuff like that. Because they wouldn't allow me to have access to a lawyer, I didn't answer any of their questions. And, you know, I mean, like, everyone as far as when they asked my name, I told them it was Donald Duck, you know?
Yeah, I think I've heard of you before, Donald.
I'm quite well known. But yeah, so they seemed a little disappointed and frustrated that I wouldn't answer their questions. But I was fortunate enough that they restrained themselves from, you know, trying to practice what they term enhanced interrogation, which is shit, it's torture.
Right.
You know, somebody asked me if the practices that they used with me in Holman Square was seemed like it was pretty typical for them. And I mean, I've thought about it, and you know what? The way they treated me, I feel personally, was not typical of the kind of treatment that people face in there, because they actually never put their hands on me. I felt like they wanted to, but I was fortunate enough to not be subject to that kind of treatment. You know, they tried to interrogate me one more time, and again, I wouldn't answer their questions because I didn't have an attorney. So finally, from what my attorney said, it was about 17 hours later, they actually managed to find me because they had called some really high-up people within the mayor's office, you know, his little cabinet of people that he keeps. And because we weren't in any system, like, there was no records of our arrest, and actually CPD told my attorneys that there were no records of anyone being arrested that night, and they knew nothing of the raid or anything. The person in the mayor's office told them to check out Holman Square because it sounds pretty typical for individuals who actually are placed in this facility. So they finally come find me, and I don't know who they were. They didn't really introduce themselves. As they were trying to interrogate me, another officer came in and told them that my attorneys were here and that they were demanding to see me. So he uncuffed me from the bench, cuffed me back up, and walked me to this little cage they have in this back room where I was actually able to speak to one of my attorneys through the fence. When I went back to the cell, the two people who were trying to interrogate me the second time were gone, and I had never heard anything from them again. And about 3 hours after I talked to my attorney, then we were finally taken to an actual real police station and then booked and charged, which is when they finally charged us with conspiracy and material support for terrorism and a whole bunch of, you know, arson and terrorism related charges, including possession of explosive devices.
What was the actual charge?
So we had about 11 charges. One charge was conspiracy to commit terrorism. We had material support for terrorism. We had conspiracy to commit arson and material support for arson. We had possession of an incendiary device with intent to commit arson. Possession of an incendiary device with knowledge that another had intent to commit arson. Possession of an incendiary device with intent to commit terrorism. Possession of an incendiary device with knowledge that another had intent to commit terrorism. And two charges of unlawful use of a weapon. Oh, and one charge of solicitation to commit arson.
There's lots of speculation that as high up as Rahm Emanuel's office was utilizing this to make an example, to have that terrorism card played. What's your intuition on that?
Well, I definitely think so. I mean, Rahm Emanuel got a lot of money in defense funds, and, you know, typical to a politician, a lot of that money went into his pocket. However, he needed something to show for, you know, having all that money spent. You know, I figure, you know, since me and my two co-defendants were the first ones to Chicago from out of state, they told these undercover police officers that we were the ones that they wanted. And so I feel like Emmanuel and, you know, Anita Alvarez and the rest of them decided to try and make an example out of us to, you know, try and scare people away from protesting.
You think that you were targeted for any other reasons? You mentioned they were asking about your political background. Do you think that played into it, perhaps?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely it did. I mean, these undercover cops claimed that they weren't as an undercover, you know, because there's, I guess there's like three tiers of different types of police work that you can do as an intelligence officer. And they kept claiming that as a level two undercover officer, they weren't allowed to actually, like, act as infiltrators. However, every time we went to a march, or whenever we went to a party, or even as we were just hanging out, they all wore, you know, black hoodies, black bandanas, and black beanie caps and stuff.
Right. And we know that there's a history of these agent provocateurs, these undercover cops posing as, you know, black bloc anarchists. We got to take our first break tonight, Brian. When we come back, we'll continue where we left off. If you're just joining us, Brian Church, one of the NATO three, speaks on the Bob Tuscan tonight, on the Bob Tuscan Show tonight, about Harmon Square and so much more. Don't go anywhere.
The Bob Tuscan Show.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your Pure Effect Ultra today by visiting pureeffectfilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit pureeffectfilters.com.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Whew, nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
To their names can be added those of hundreds and thousands of others who stood in the way of the new order.
Right now.
Isn't what we're building for.
He wasn't allowed to make contact with anybody. His wrists, as he said in the last segment, were cuffed to a bar behind a bench in a windowless cinder block cell. We're talking with Brian Jacob Church, who was arrested and later known as one of the NATO Three, a protester charged with terrorism. This trumped up charge to try to, well, appeal to the PR firm behind, well, a number of different politicians that want to continue to perpetuate the notion that after 9/11 we have to be safe in this post 9/11 world and so on and so forth. Was 9/11 brought up at all in the context of your endeavor, of your experience?
There were a couple of times where like the symbolism of 9/11 was involved, but that was a trial issue that we actually had to argue about in court. The judge actually had to go back into the back room so we could argue over that.
So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it was brought up in trial to try to frame it under the lens of, you know, post 9/11 world. That was actually a tactic the prosecutors used.
It was one of several. I mean, you know, there was there was one of the things that they were alleging that we were trying to do, which was vandalize a Chase bank. And what they did was they kind of like stood off like a mile and took a picture of like the big Chase Bank tower in the background, and so like it was reminiscent of, you know, the Twin Towers.
Wow. Interesting. Tell me a little bit more about the trial and how that all went down. The trial's over with now, right? So we can talk about at least the outcome. We might not be able to talk about details, but you can tell the listeners what you were inevitably charged with and so on.
I think that's a safe topic.
It's public record. I mean, there are some things that, for those that don't know, that Brian was informed to not talk about for legal reasons and to continue to protect himself. So we want to respect that, Brian, because we support you, man, and we don't want any muddy water here. But what was the result of the trial? That's all public knowledge now. Obviously, you're talking to me not from a jail cell at the moment.
Yeah. So we spent about 3 weeks going through trial. This whole time, you know, I mean, it seemed like a circus to me. I mean, I'm not going to get into that. But so the end result was that the jury wasn't buying the stuff that the state's attorneys were trying to put against us and say about us. And, you know, they didn't really consider us a threat. I mean, they didn't really consider what the state was alleging to be, you know, terrorism in the first place. So what ended up being the result was that all three of us were found not guilty of our terrorism charges, you know, conspiracy and material support for terrorism. But we were, however, found guilty of misdemeanor mob action charges, as well as two counts of possession of the incendiary device, one with intent to commit arson and the other with knowledge that another had intent to plant arson. And the only reason that we were found guilty of the possession charges is because we were in what's called constructive possession of those Molotov cocktails.
So it was a technicality. We'll be right back with Brian Church.
The Bob Tuscan Show.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com, and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Has your dancing and romancing done gone away? Are you moaning and a-groaning from the stresses of the day? Are you reeling and appealing because a headache's on the way? Well, relax for just a moment. Stress relief is on the way. Of what am I speaking, you ask? The essential oils of long historic use, the wisdom of the ages, the health care of the ancients, frankincense, myrrh, hyssop, and hundreds of others too numerous to mention. What could be more appealing? Do you know that Young Living essential oils is an element of life that makes them extremely effective in body rejuvenation? This element is called vibration, and it works with body systems, not against them. The professionals at Divine Living Oils have tested and been so impressed with this product that we are using them to help others. And who are we? We are health professionals with many years' experience. Trust us, we have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our motto? Because we care about you. Do your health and spirit a great favor. Call us at 304-542-4226. That's 304-542-4226. Again, that's 304-542-4226.
Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Come to Finca Bayano, a small community in Panama, which is being established for people who believe that a future crisis may be difficult to survive in North America after a collapse of the system. Go to bugoutpanama.com for more information. There is limited space for 100 people only. Go to bugoutpanama.com to immigrate as long as you can. Prepare. Don't despair. At bugoutpanama.com.
Dr. Joel Wallach, author of the famous health lecture, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, presents his newest book, Epigenetics. Epigenetics is required reading for the very survival of Americans, and yes, all of humanity. Modern man has bet on the wrong horse to save them from disease and pestilence. The medical system has failed us fearfully. Join the health revolution. Buy Epigenetics today and receive a free membership to purchase all the products that Dr. Joel Wallach formulated at wholesale prices and receive a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. All this for only $25 plus shipping and handling. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311. Again, that's just $25 plus shipping and handling. And you'll receive the new book, Epigenetics, a free membership, and a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Call 888-311-4311. That's
888-311-4311. Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of earth. I'm gonna put on an iron shirt and chase Satan out of earth. I'm gonna put on an iron shirt. Chase the devil out of earth. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race.
Ryan, there's no doubt in my mind that we see a militarization of the police force going on. And you talk a little bit in releasing the information that you did about Homan Square, about what you've seen in the complex there in Chicago with these militarized vehicles. And also there was mention of a particular officer that has been investigated that had connections with Guantanamo Bay, which of course is very similar to what many are saying is going on at Homan Square. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I didn't actually, I dropped the ball on, doing a little bit of reading on this person who apparently either worked for the people at Guantanamo Bay and then came to Chicago, or he worked in Chicago and then moved to Guantanamo Bay. So I'm not really sure about what history was.
And essentially, just to back it up here, there's a...
Indulged in plenty of, abuses, especially as a police officer, plenty of torture and stuff.
Yeah, let me just jump in here and say that the officer who is in question is Detective Richard Zuli, who is somebody who came from Guantanamo Bay, and there is a definite blurring of lines between domestic law enforcement and military operations. And Tracy Siska, who's a criminologist and civil rights activist in Chicago, said this about him. She said that the real danger is allowing practices like Guantanamo or Abu Ghraib is the fact that they always creep into other aspects. They creep into domestic law enforcement, either with weaponry, like with the militarization of the police, or interrogation practices. That's how we ended up with a black site in Chicago. So that's a kind of an underlying current here in this story, Brian, is this militarization and these tactics that are emulated out of a handbook from Guantanamo, perhaps. Tell me a little bit more about that, though, about the interrogation process. You described being handcuffed for hours at a time. No waterboarding took place, did it?
No, I was definitely fortunate. They didn't do any kind of like physical torture type tactics. It was more along the lines of like sleep deprivation and like mild starvation, and you know, like they wouldn't let us use the bathroom and stuff like that. And of course, it's a pretty big psychological thing when you tell somebody that they can't, you know, after you just arrested them, they can't make a phone call to a lawyer and that nobody knows that where you're at. So I mean, like, I was definitely fortunate, and like I had said earlier, like the way they were treating me did not seem typical at all. Not because, you know, they didn't allow me access to a lawyer, but because they didn't actually put their hands on me, and they seemed like they were being really restrained.
Interesting. Did your defense team argue that entrapment was a part of their trumped up charges?
Unfortunately, the way entrapment works, I don't know if it works like that, you know, around the country in other states, but we are facing a state terrorism charge, which is strange in itself, because most terrorism cases go federal, but, we weren't allowed to argue entrapment strictly because in order to argue entrapment, we would have had to actually like admit guilt to, you know, even having like, even as far as, you know, saying that we were guilty of conspiring to commit acts of terrorism. And the truth is that we didn't even want to say that, because the reality is that there was no conspiracy to do anything.
So it was in a sense entrapment without any intention of a crime at all.
Yeah. So what they call that is soft entrapment argument, which basically means that we argue for entrapment, but we don't plead not guilty because of entrapment. Unfortunately, our judge was not exactly on our side, and so we weren't even allowed to argue a soft entrapment because, our judge had said that that wasn't the issue, and if we were going to argue entrapment, then we had to plead not guilty due to entrapment rather than just pleading innocent completely.
Well, this judge, I'm sure that the judge has a lot of shady dealings. Didn't at first the judge deny a trial by jury?
I don't think so. Okay. But I mean, there were some rulings that he did make that we absolutely do not agree with. But I think I'll need to wait until I'm off parole and, you know, my other two co-defendants are actually out and about before I speak on that.
Yeah, we want to be careful here. So they're still in jail?
Yes. The three of us, we were given different sentences. I was given 5 years at 50%, and I had spent 2 years in county jail fighting the case, so I got that for good time. And the 50% is what's called statutory good time, so if you get 5 years at 50%, you only have to do 2.5. So I ended up only having to do 6 months in prison plus the 2 years in county jail.
Wow.
Our co-defendant, Brent, got 6 years at 50. And my other co-defendant, Jared Chase, who now goes by Maya, she identifies as a woman now. She got 8 years at 50 and is also fighting another battery case against the police officer in county.
Does she know Bradley Manning?
Seems like they have a
lot in common.
Bradley Manning, who now goes as Chelsea, and actually sure. Maya has come out with a statement a while back, actually, requesting hormone treatment. And he said that if he couldn't, you know, get the hormone treatment, that she would go on hunger strike. She actually has had to do that, unfortunately, quite often. She suffers from a pretty severe mental illness, and while we're in county, you know, like sometimes they wouldn't give her the proper medications that she needed, or they wouldn't give her the proper diet that she needed in order to maintain her health. So
how did you first meet them? I don't know that I know the backstory.
I'm sorry?
How did you meet these guys and now gals?
Okay, so in, it was 2011, Occupy Wall Street had started. This was around the time when I actually moved down to Fort Lauderdale from Central Florida in 2010. And
is that when we met briefly?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
But so the next year in September, Occupy Wall Street had started. And, as I'm going through my EMT schooling and stuff, and I'm still researching these other things, because, you know, I had gotten interested, since I had left military school that I was involved in. So I had done my research and I saw the things that were going on, were not the kind of America that I had been led to believe it was when I was in school and stuff.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, I think his name was Scott Olson. Got shot in the face by a cop with a flashbang grenade or something like that, and nearly killed him. And the guy was a Marine Corps veteran, and he was just standing there. And I watched this video, and it just disgusted me. I was like, I couldn't find the words to describe how I was feeling when I saw that video. And so it was at this point when I watched this video that I was like, all right, well, you know what? Occupy's starting. I'm going to go check out the marches and do what the occupation is all about. The first march I went to, but I didn't go to. I was kind of around, you know, I just watched. I wanted to see how the police were responding to the protesters, you know, just in case. You know, I didn't want to become involved in anything that could have been hazardous to my health. I just watched. But the second march came around, and, you know, because the police reacted pretty peacefully towards the protesters, I decided to get involved. And this is where I actually met Brent. because Brent was the first person in Fort Lauderdale to set up a tent in front of City Hall, which is where we slept for about 3 weeks before they finally evicted us.
Actually, that was right when I met you. You had just told me about sleeping in front of City Hall, and that's when we first met. I remember that now.
Yeah. And he brought her down to Fort Lauderdale, and we all met up, and you know, we became pretty good friends. You know, we were up there, struggling and trying to expose injustices, especially going on in Fort Lauderdale, where they'll arrest you for feeding homeless people, which we never got arrested, but we did go out and feed homeless people quite a bit. We just got involved with these different types of actions, and that's pretty much how we became friends. So when we found out that the NATO summit was happening in Chicago, I talked to Brent about it, and Brent talked to Maya about it, and we just decided to take a road trip.
So you went up there with the intention of simply protesting and nothing more?
Well, when we talked, we had decided that we were going to be protesting, of course, but if it came down to it, we would be willing to be arrested for, you know, like civil disobedience reasons, such as like sitting in front of Bank of America or like blocking traffic or something like that.
So typical civil disobedience, nothing out of the ordinary when it comes to civil disobedience.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. You were breaking up a little bit.
No problem. I'm just trying to point out that this was just your typical civil disobedience that protesters have used for ages and ages.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, we knew that there was a possibility that we could get arrested for such things. But like, as far as, you know, like making Molotov cocktails, and they said that we were gonna go burn down police cars and stuff for whatever, that stuff was not even on our minds at all, you know?
Yeah, where did they get that from though? Did they twist something you did say?
A lot of the things that they brought up in trial and stuff, as far as some of the things that were talked about on recording. Most of those types of conversations were brought up and introduced and, encouraged by the undercover police officers. Even making the Molotov cocktails, right? We're just sitting around one night, where, you know, having a couple of drinks, you know, the undercovers had brought over some alcohol or whatever, and, you know, we were drinking, and it was then when one of the undercover police officers, known as Glove, or Officer Chico, she had said something like, hey, so you guys want to make some off-top cocktails? And, like, we kind of, like, looked at each other and was like, what? What?
You guys were having a couple of drinks. Maybe he was talking about that kind of cocktail.
I'm sorry, you say that again, please?
You guys were having a few drinks. Maybe he was talking about that kind of cocktail.
Unfortunately, I mean, that's what we thought at first, but that didn't turn out to be the case, because they facilitated the making of actual explosives.
So at any point did you say to the guy, what the hell are you doing?
I think I had mentioned before, we as anarchists, you know, we don't believe in holding ourselves in authority over other people. However, we also don't believe in, hurting people or even animals or whatever. You know, we don't believe in property destruction. We don't believe in that stuff. That's typically stuff that the mainstream media pushes out to the population in order to demonize and criminalize people with revolutionary views that actually, when you, you know, do some research and look into it, these things actually make sense.
The Bob Tuscan Show.
Recent events have shown just how vulnerable we are to deadly viruses, bacteria, and fungus. These diseases are all caused by infectious pathogens that often get the upper hand on conventional medical treatments. Now more than ever, there's a great need for a product that will help protect us. Look no further. Supernatural Silver can provide immune system support to help fight off these deadly pathogens. Supernatural Silver is a new and vastly improved type of silver solution that's safe and extremely effective against 143 types of bacteria, both forms of viruses, mold, and yeast. Supernatural Silver can be taken orally or used topically and can be used in a nebulizer or vaporizer for inhalation. With over 180 scientific studies by independent universities, hospitals, and research institutions, Supernatural Silver is a powerful weapon against disease. Go to supernaturalsilver.com and use the promo code SILVER2014 for 20% off your entire order. Give you and your loved ones a fighting chance with Supernatural Silver.
Your money. What is it worth today? A $100 bill in 1913 is worth only $2 today. So now, your money is just about worthless, and the Fed will continue printing more and more of it. But what if you could turn it around, $1 at a time, and make your money worth more than it is now? How? By acquiring gold before your paper money is totally worthless. But how can you afford gold at today's prices? By buying it 1 gram at a time. And this is so important because gold is the future. For as little as $65, you can begin trading your almost worthless currency for something real, something you can hold. Carat bars, which keep their value, can be stored securely, and are easily accessible, just like a savings account, but a savings account backed by your gold. Carat Bars International, a savings account you can count on. For more information, please click on the Carat Bars banner ad at republicbroadcasting.org. Again, that's the Carat Bars banner ad at republicbroadcasting.org. And start saving now.
Woo. Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
What are you thinking? Micro plant powder with iodine and probiotics for a total body detox for around $10 a month. HempUSA.org has 12 formulations of micro plant powder for absorbing and removing toxins from your kidneys, liver, blood, lungs, stomach, and colon, and feel better than ever. It alkalizes, oxygenates, kills parasites, does the job of 10 products. That saves you space, time, and money. Call 888-910-4367 only at HempUSA.org.
Through their ministries of propaganda, each took complete control of the theater, the movies, the radio, every cultural activity and every channel of information.
Well, times is tough, all right.
It's the future.
What do you want the world to know about Chicago and Holman Square and your case, Brian?
Well, Chicago has a long history of corrupt politicians and violent police officers towards the citizens of this country. And even those who aren't citizens of this country have experienced, you know, brutality at the hands of Chicago PD. However, the city is a really nice city. You know, I mean, people are friendly, the food's good, beautiful architecture and stuff. You know, I'd like to see, well, aside from the cold, of course, I'm a Florida boy. but it needs to be known that my two co-defendants and I never had any intention on creating chaos in this city. We believe in, you know, protesting and, you know, fighting for freedom in a peaceful manner. And I've especially, nowadays, been adamant on being very clear about my stance on violence, which I don't agree with. But I think it's insanity that these politicians and these state attorneys and stuff are so willing to, you know, try and criminalize dissent that they're going to go as far as calling somebody terrorist. And even the federal government didn't want to prosecute us because they said we weren't a threat and there was no evidence to support terrorism charges. But Anita Alvarez, the state's attorney, the head state's attorney, decided to go through with the charges anyhow, but instead of federal charges, they made it a state charge.
The first charge of its kind.
Yes, that is correct. The first terrorism case the state of Illinois has ever had to deal with was me and my two co-defendants.
Right.
We tried to challenge the constitutionality based on the vague language used in the statute, which, you know, it describes the things that police do on a daily basis perfectly.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, there was a couple other things that we challenged.
Ryan. Yeah. Ryan, I want to do this again. I appreciate you giving us the opening interview here. And we will do it. But I want to first encourage you to keep on fighting, not in a violent way, figuratively speaking, against the powers that shouldn't be, and exposing these elements of corruption in our world today. And I want to commend you for your bravery and your honesty. Thanks so much, okay?
All right, thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.
Activism in action. Now go plant some seeds. With finance.